Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Here on the Believe Podcast Network, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place of the show for every team in Southern California and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? Yes, this is your co-host, Anthony Cerdelli. And with me, as always, my esteemed fellow co-host on the line down at his home in Orange County, Ken Huskins. Ken, how you doing?
Anthony, good, man. I'm doing well. Thanks. Sunday night here. This is the second time we've done this. I guess when all else fails, this was kind of the, we got to get this thing done, though. Get our weekly installment here.
Yeah, the late night episode, but that's good because usually there's a lot of stuff that happens. If there was no Sunday game tonight, but there was a big Saturday win the Ducks had that we could both digest, I think. And besides that, we're going to be going over a little bit of Edmonton, Detroit games, San Jose, and St. Louis. Three losses, one in overtime, and then a big win against the defending Stanley Cup champions. And before we get started, you can find us, as always, on your favorite podcast directories. It's iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. You can find us on Believe.com and at Believe Podcast on your social accounts. You can find me at DeliTweets on Twitter. That's DelliTweets. And you can find Kent at HuskVerna. That's HUSK_VERNA on Instagram. And you can find him at his coffee shop. He's working there for quite a bit.
Oh, nice. That's right. Yeah, a lot these days. Just extended hours for the fall. So kind of all hands on deck here.
Very nice. A lot of once the sunlight starts to go away, you need a lot more caffeine to stay awake, I find.
That's right, exactly.
All right, so let's get into it. So it was a little bit of a rough week for the Ducks, especially to start out with. They fall to Edmonton in a game where you could pretty much see they were really missing Josh Manson, and I think Lindholm was out for that one. Yeah, Lindholm was out for that one as well, and really just had a lot of trouble with the Edmonton Oilers' top line and their power play. What did you see in that game?
Yeah, I think definitely missing those guys, and just a team that's been playing really well under a new coach. They found some chemistry. They're two big guns, McDavid and Draisaitl, are just absolutely lighting the league on fire. It's crazy. They're putting up points like guys did in the 80s. Like, this is like the clip that they're at is just insane. But they kind of ran into a bit of a buzzsaw there. I thought they actually played pretty well. I mean, 6-2, yeah, but I think another game where they had their chances. Probably it's rare that this, you can say this, but probably give his not his best night, but just like I say, I mean, those are few and far between with that guy. And I mean, it's just such a difficult lineup with the things they throw at you and the players they have. And I just kind of went through, basically rewatched all the goals and kind of gave them a grade out of 10 on difficulty. I think the first one, that's a tough one to give up. And I think you kind of saw in the replay that Gibby was even kind of like kicking himself after that one, like kind of looking up and almost smiling about like, what else can you do after that? It's just one of those plays where you probably think you have the angle and covered and it just squeaks through your armpit or just somehow finds a little bit of daylight. And I think that's got to be probably a frustrating one to give up. The second one, the shot right along the ice, and I know that probably looks like a pretty stoppable puck, but it's kind of the whole speed of being the extreme wild card. When you have a guy that moves like McDavid flying into the zone on the entry, it's just like there's basically no one else in the league, maybe McKinnon, or maybe you'd be hard pressed to find another guy skating with that kind of speed coming into the zone. And it just has to throw you off. So he's trying to kind of match speed as he's coming to the net, and he caught him off guard with the shot. I think he surprised him. Wasn't expecting to shoot, and that's always the danger of or always the dangerous nature of having that quick release. Why they always kind of all these goal scorers, it's not always how hard the shot is or how perfectly placed it is. A lot of it's on the release and deception, and that was, it didn't look like he was going to shoot, and then all of a sudden he just zips it along the ice and kind of right under the pad, and it kind of looked a little awkward. But then you have Nugent Hopkins' shot. That was pretty much a perfect shot
on the power play there, that roof job, like upper 90, to use a soccer term, huh?
That's, and he kind of shot it around. I'm not sure who that was in the slot, but that's just a perfect shot. So that one I had as a 9. The Cassian, where he kind of broke in off the wing, I had a, I think that was maybe some nuance stuff, but I mean, this is not, as a defenseman, I kind of, my knowledge of the mechanics of goaltending is limited, but that just looked like to me like a bit of a misread or a misplay, or he was going to maybe poke check and then decide not to or something. And so I think that was, I had that as kind of a weaker one as well, on par with the first one. But I mean, after that, I think David's second goal is just kind of like, you can throw everything else out the window. That was just a sick goal. My God.
Like, yeah.
That was just something you just got to kind of sit back and clap for. That was kind of otherworldly. But to go down on one knee at full speed and not break stride, and then somehow skate backwards and sideways, and then like roof it like against one of like the best goalies in the league. That was a crazy, crazy goal. And then last one is power play, just kind of zipping it around everywhere, and changing sides, and the puck goes in. So I don't know. It was a tough one, a tough lineup that's playing well and playing with a lot of confidence, and just wasn't a good result. But I mean, like I think we've said before, like you're gonna have those nights with so much youth in the lineup, and you just gotta keep putting guys out there. And a lot of times, that's how you learn, is make mistakes, and you have to learn how to recover from mistakes. Yep, there's always a lot. Almost more to learn from your mistakes, and more development to take place in those kind of games, and the following couple of days, we can kind of look back and coach and review the tape and that kind of thing. So
yeah,
always looking for progress is the name of the game, I think, over the course of this season for sure, and just turn it into a learning experience. I think it's probably what we're looking for.
Yep. And to borrow a line, I don't know if you've seen the movie from Basketball, what an unfortunate thing to happen on free hat night, that the opponent gets a hat trick.
Oh, well played. Yeah, great reference.
There. Yeah. And heading into the Detroit game, you kind of transitioned to something I wanted to talk about well, and that was learning opportunities and for my take, kind of the youth on the ice. And we've talked a lot about Dallas Eakins being willing to put his young players in difficult positions and high pressure situations, and that's good for their long-term development. But I wonder, there was a situation in overtime game ending goal that the Red Wings had, where I wonder if maybe just for the sake of trying to bust out of that losing streak, there might have been better suited with more experience on the ice. And that was the final play, basically, that Detroit won on, where Sam Steele has the puck in his defensive, or excuse me, in the Wings offensive zone. He's carrying it. He kind of looks at Andre Kasha, who makes Kasha motions with his glove, and Steele flips the puck. It was hard to tell. It looked like he was trying to flip the puck out of the zone to Josh Mahurin. It looked, from what Kasha was doing, skating towards the bench, like that's what he was trying to tell Steele to do. But Mahura and Steele, there was some crossed wires there. That results in a foot race that actually Ryan Miller wins, clears the puck over to the kind of the side of the neutral zone, and that's when Detroit wins that battle and ends up getting that rush and Dennis Cholowski's game-winning goal. Do you, first of all, is that, am I reading that right? Kind of, was that your impression of what went on, that miscommunication? And then second, is there a time, would you have put maybe a more experienced forward out there instead of Steele? Because you've got Steele and Mahura out there and then Kasha, who's a veteran. But I'm wondering if you want to break out of a slump or kind of limit the opportunities against you, if that's maybe the thing to do. Sorry, that was a mouthful.
Yeah, I guess personally, I don't really have a problem with it. I thought, I think Maher has been really good. I had that nice, talking about the snipe from Nugent Hopkins. He had a nice snipe kind of through traffic, barring in. Nice goal. He's played a lot of minutes and he's played well, deservedly so. Like he's earned his minutes. He's playing well in the power play, playing well across the board. I think he's looked good. So I think, yeah, when you see guys kind of making that kind of strides, a young player making that, you want to reward him and put him in situations like that where he can kind of grow and learn and get gain experience. And yeah, that's part of the equation. I think on that play, I watched it a few times and I just saw the puck. I didn't see Steele with the puck. I just saw the puck kind of squirt back out of the, like back into the neutral zone. And I saw Kasha kind of waving. I thought it looked like he was waving to, like you saw the puck kind of going back, but I don't know if he was late in the shift and didn't have the legs to get it. So he was kind of waving Mahura to try and go chase it down. But I guess there might have been some miscommunication there, but real wily veteran Cole Miller, Ryan, Miller flying out of the net, chips it out to safety. And so there was no real problem there. It was kind of a loose 50-50 puck that ended up, Detroit kind of came out of that. But then even coming down, the game-winning goal, you're playing 3-on-3. It's usually a shot you're pretty comfortable giving up, like kind of from the outside, basically almost on the face-off dot. Like that's not a dangerous shot usually. It just kind of, you basically shot it through. I guess that would have been Mahura back there and just kind of shot it through and just kind of snuck through the armpit and just kind of, I mean, I guess give him the benefit of the doubt and call it a skilled, well-placed shot, either that or it was lucky and just kind of went in. But yeah, I don't have a problem with that. And like I say, it wasn't like they gave up like a 2-on-0 breakaway or anything like that. Like it's kind of, it was just a good shot. Guy made a good shot, kind of give it to him. And yeah, it was a hard-fought game against another kind of, another young team, another young, scrappy, fast team with a lot of youth. Probably fitting it went to overtime and then just a bounce, I think. I didn't really have a problem with that, having those guys out there together. And it's something you have to do if you're kind of going to be real about this being a process. Like, you have to be willing. Like, it's not always going to be rosy. There's going to be mistakes are going to happen. Like I say, that's an as important part of development as when as success too.
Yeah. And I think, that is a good point. That's probably why one of the many hundreds of thousands of reasons why I'm not an NHL coach. but the sticking, I guess you're right. In a way, it's good that Eakins is sticking to his guns. His players know what to expect. They know that they're going to be rewarded for playing well and that they're going to be given another chance if they make a mistake and a learning opportunity. I just thought in that particular situation that miscommunication was interesting to me because I just found the replay there, it took me a while to find one where you could actually go back far enough to see the puck on Steele's stick, but it looked like he tried to saucer pass it. And I think Kasha was telling him to get it back to Mahura so that Steele and Kasha could change. They could retain possession of the puck and then kind of, because it's such a big deal with 3-on-3 overtime to keep possession that... Yeah. I think that's what they were going for.
That's true. So I think that might be the difference. I wasn't able to find that elusive replay, but than you had. So I just saw the puck go back in the neutral zone. But if that is the case, then yeah, it's a mistake. But all the same, I think that the end kind of summary of my takeaway from it is, if that's kind of your direction as a franchise, then I mean, that's not that is a coaching call as well. But I mean, these things are often kind of decided on how strategies are going to run, I think, kind of organizationally too. And if you're organizationally under the philosophy that we're gonna definitely do everything we can to win now, but realize that the part of the long term for this franchise is these young players, and they have to play in these situations and give them license to make mistakes.
And I think you're right too. I mean, I think that's also an important thing that Bob Murray knew what he was getting when he hired Eakins. He's not hiring a guy like Claude Julien or someone who's a win now coach. He's hiring a developmental guy who's had success at the lower levels and who's willing to stick to his guns. So I see where you're coming from there for sure.
Yeah. I think, definitely. I think we'll see, we're both right.
All right, let's move on to the San Jose game. I heard you were fraternizing with the enemy before San Jose, huh?
it was good seeing some of the old guys up there. And yeah, after getting traded from Anaheim over there, had a couple of great years, and still some old friends on that team and great guys. So I went in the morning and brought some lattes to the training staff, and still basically the entire same team with all the trainers and staff still working there for the team. So went in and had a good chat and hung out with them, saw some of the old teammates there as well. So it was fun to see those guys also.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the most interesting thing happened off the ice, and this is the New England born and bred Boston sports radio paranoia straw man argument side of me. But there was a little interesting thing that happened. So Delorier gets in that fight in the first, and this is all social media. I could be making it up completely, but Delorier gets in the fight in the first period of the game, and I tweeted out, Delorier knows why he's in the lineup, because he's been fighting a lot, and I mean, he brings an important not to take away from what he's been doing on the ice as well, because we'll talk later about he played a pretty big part in Derek Grant's hat trick. But he's a gritty guy. He knows what he needs to stay in the lineup, and he happened to be playing more after Max Comtois gets sent down to the AHL. So all of a sudden, I get all these notifications on my phone and likes and retweets, and I'm like, what the hell is happening? Like, I don't have this big of a Twitter following, and they definitely don't like what I have to say. So sure enough, Max Comtois retweeted my Delorier tweet, and I was like, that's kind of weird. Like, I wonder what he's trying to say. And then the next morning it was gone. He had deleted it. So I'm like, huh, what could he possibly be doing? And I mean, obviously not to stir anything up, but I see you, Max. I think you're a little miffed that you're back down in the AHL, where you maybe don't think you should be when you've got Delorier in there fighting every night. But not to make any, not to stir anything, but it was curious.
That is interesting. The social media world. That's wow.
They can get you in trouble, but he deleted it. So I think, I can see where he's coming from. He played pretty well, in my opinion. And I've always been a big Max Comtois fan since last year. And he scored that first goal of his career so quickly. And he's had a demonstrated ability to score at every level. He's physical. He's a good leader from what people say. So I am on the Max Comtois bandwagon. I'm also not off the Delorier bandwagon, because Nicholas Delorier, because he's a pretty good he's a pretty good player, as we saw in the St. Louis game. If did you have anything to add from San Jose, or are you ready to move on to St. Louis?
No, I think that's really interesting to me, that kind of sequence of events with the social media thing, because I thought I agree that Comtois has played well. I think with a higher end prospect, I think there's always a big picture thinking behind what happens. And I guess I don't know enough about the circumstances or kind of, I mean, what we see on the TV and what you see in games is definitely, it's a result oriented business, these professional sports, obviously, but there's a lot more that goes into things than the 15 minutes that these guys play on the ice. I mean, there's practice habits, how you carry yourself as a professional, how you, the teammate. Like, I'm not saying there's any issues there. I'm just saying that those are examples. It's kind of the global, nature of development and what they're looking for out of each guy. In each case, as you've said before, each case is so unique, and each personality. These guys are all like, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids. And I think, as all of us, the same thing. You know, how much you can, I don't know, I know how much of an idiot I was at 21. And you just, I think you just have so much growth that you go through in those years, of kind of forming yourself as a pro. And I think, yeah, the organization's trying to get the most they can out of him. And that's kind of what they feel is necessary now. I don't know. It's hard to say, but I think he's played great. I think he's a great player. Yeah, like the physical, high end skill. But I don't know. I don't.
Yeah.
I thought this with that, but Delorier has also. I mean, I think he's done a great job. Definitely has a role that he fills. And I said this when they signed him, I think when we first started, like, to get those depth signings right, that stuff matters to a team. And I think it was a great signing. He's played well. Added to a very effective fourth line, and to provide that physicality makes other defensemen, I know, I can tell you from experience, makes you sometimes rush things, and if you kind of get dinged a couple times, get your face put in the glass, then you tend to kind of rush things, which can lead to turnovers or what have you. And then the fight, I mean, that just lifts the whole team. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I think it's just something that's, for whatever reason, the hockey kind of has that ability to really fire up a team and be kind of a rallying thing for the group. So I think he's done a great job as well, as every deserving of his minutes and appearances and games played as anyone.
Absolutely. And on that note, let's get to the St. Louis game. So you were talking about going back there, being physical with the opponent's defense, and that is exactly what Delorier did. I forgot who the defenseman was, but I think it was the it might have been their first line. It might have been Shattenkirk, or sorry, not Shattenkirk, Petrangelo. He's he hit to, and Petrangelo just coughs the puck up right in front of the net, and Grant puts it in. So that's a that right there is a pretty much exactly what you're talking about. He I don't think he got an assist on the play, but he should have, because that was pretty much exactly what caused it.
Yeah, that gets dumped in kind of around the end wall. He goes back to get it. What he's looking to do is just a little second quick or a little bump to the middle. But yeah, I don't know. It just kind of, and Delorier comes flying in, and yeah, I mean, as a defenseman, you're aware of who's on the ice, and I don't care how much grit and the competitor that you are, like, no one likes getting hit, and especially by a guy that can put some hurt on you. And but yeah, I think he maybe rushed it just for a tenth of a second, but he was just trying to bump it maybe absorbed a little bit of contact and then bumped it to the forward in the middle. And well, if that threw off the timer or whatever happened, he ended up bumping it and it hit Delorier's skate. And yeah, popped right in front of the net. And there's Derek Grant right there and Johnny on the spot.
Yeah, it was a good gritty goal, and I think that game St. Louis really felt to me like a microcosm of the month of November. Only it ended in a win. Gibson plays really well overall. I would venture to say he and Grant were the reasons that the Ducks won that game. But the first goal Gibson lets up on Vince Dunn is kind of similar to the one he gave up in Edmonton. I wonder if Dunn had been maybe scouting that pad area, that long hard shot along the ice, kind of try to slide it under the pad, because it looked pretty familiar from early in the week. But he recovers, plays really well, and ends up kind of stealing the Ducks a victory in that game, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably for the rest of the season, that's going to be the recipe. I mean, it's always going to include amazing goaltending, I think, for them to win games. I mean, for any team to win games these days, your goaltending has to be top notch. And I think that's a very valid point, and that is definitely not a mistake. We saw a similar goal, because these days, I mean, there's a million camera angles, there's video for days, and guys watch it. Guys spend hours watching video, and you can be guaranteed that like, this was kind of starting as I was kind of finishing up. You'd have all your pre-scout of the other teams. So obviously you'd have your power play, penalty kill, all their 5-on-5 tendencies, but there was always a goalie scout report complete with video, and it was getting more detailed and detailed every year. So you can be guaranteed that they were showing them that, yeah, I mean, if you're short side, like, this went in. So don't be afraid to shoot that from this angle. And also, I was curious, I don't know if it's just a coincidence, but it was another phenomenal shot in the San Jose game that was basically same release point and same, almost exact same shot as the Nugent Hopkins goal. Tomas Hurdle had an almost identical goal. So that's just kind of, yeah, seeing those two things, I just don't think that's a mistake. And that's the interesting kind of nature of video and the connectivity of everything, even plus, yeah, to hockey, especially in sports. So that game, yeah, that goal by Dunn, but then, yeah, just basically shut the door for the rest of the night. Some amazing saves, and just awesome to see Derek Grant, a guy like that. I think he's played phenomenal all year. I can't believe he only has 4 or 5 goals. It seems like every highlight package is getting a breakaway or 2-on-1 shorthanded. Him and Rowney are always there on the net getting these awesome chances, but those guys have been playing great. You can see him get rewarded with a hat trick, and awesome way to finish it too. Kind of that sequence of the empty netter, just a small thing, but how he gets the puck at the blue line, and instead of kind of all or nothing with the eyes as big as saucers, just thinking about me and that third goal, his first priority is to bump it over to Ryan, just to get a better chance of kind of getting it out of the zone. And then same thing from him, just instantly, just no brainer, easily kind of does a little snap back kick up to the up to his back end, and just knocks it back over to, I mean, he could have had the empty netter easily, but knocked it back over to Grant to go in and get the hat trick. That was good unselfishness, good leadership, and an awesome way to polish off the W.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was great leadership by Getzlaf there. And now Derek Grant gets to name one of his friends' kids, apparently. If that was the bet he made over the summer.
That's great. Derek.
And just a last note there, the hit on Gibson by, I think it was Sundqvist. I might be getting the guy wrong, but that right there is what you're going to expect from the Blues. I mean, they like to play across the line physically sometimes. They play right on the line, but they pretty much did exactly what they have done all season and last season, is that push the limits physically and kind of wear you down. But it was, I thought that was something that I don't know, maybe I haven't noticed it in the Ducks this season, but I was impressed that they were able to withstand that and give it back a little, which was good to see, because they've always kind of been known as a physical team, especially under Randy Carlyle. But this season, with the focus more on the younger players and trying to just kind of see what they have as a group, you kind of forget about the physicality, but they withstood it pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was a great win against a tough team, but proven to be a difficult opponent for a lot of teams, and to play there at a Saturday home game. It was a Saturday home game, anyways. Impressive all around, no doubt.
So the Ducks have a tough schedule coming up. It doesn't get any easier. They play after playing the last year's Stanley, the current defending Stanley Cup champions, they play the champions before that, the Capitals, then they go down to Florida, play the Panthers, then the Tampa Bay Lightning. So they've got even though the Lightning have struggled a little bit, they have a tough schedule ahead of them. And I think as much as I thought the last couple weeks were important for them to play well and bank some points, this, if they can bounce back and grab a win in the next, I mean, if you include St. Louis, maybe take 2 of 4 on this road trip against such strong competition, I won't have given up hope that they can remain competitive until the end of until the playoffs.
Yeah, well, hopefully the pattern continues of them being able to elevate for the top level opponents. I mean, I don't think too many people out there expected, after the way things have been going, for them to bounce back with that kind of performance against the Blues. So yeah, that's those games are easy to get up for. You know, you have to bring your best, and there's kind of without that, it just kind of adds a way of sharpening things up and making sure everyone's alert to all the details. Hopefully they can pull it off again.
Absolutely. So let's get to the three stars of the game, or of the podcast in this case. Today we're going to be talking favorite either play-by-play or color commentators from from around the league. I'm sure, Kent, that even before and after your career in hockey, you were a fan, you watched it on TV. So who for you are your three favorites?
Okay, so the first one by far is just an easy one. Just a love. Growing up, watching the Hockey Night in Canada, and it was always Bob Cole. The guy was just an icon, and just kind of synonymous with hockey. And any big game or in playoffs, always had the best calls, always had like the great little nuances that kind of just had a kind of steely kind of voice too, and just had a way of capturing the excitement and adding to it. Obviously kind of a blatant homer for the Maple Leafs at times, but still just added to the effect. And just one of my favorite nuances was when he would come down and someone would fire a shot wide. You know, sometimes like give the measurement, like, oh, he missed the net by 7 feet. Or just had like the precise measurements out, just all of those great little things. But he was just iconic, and yeah, he's got to be my favorite of all time. I think the other one, another great one that I didn't know a lot about until my best friend and roommate from Clarkson was a Buffalo guy, and he taught me all about the Jenneretism. We talked about Maiden, I think it was last week, which was one, but he said this guy had so many gems of a call, like just over the years. Like Wowie Howe's leaving, my buddy, but I was just crying off all these things, but just the levels his voice would get to, and the it's crazy, like borderline I don't know, not like shrieking, but he would just get so into it. I don't know. I know you're supposed to be impartial, but I always think it's funny and I'll get a little bit of the
Oh yeah,
Homerness
absolutely.
coming
I've got him
in.
on my list. I'll go into a couple of my favorites of his as well, but I'll let you finish up too.
Yeah, and then I think a couple more, I guess. One, I think, kind of in that vein of home team enthusiasm, kind of more so current. I think Randy Hahn, San Jose, I think does a really nice job. I think he's does a good job of kind of adding excitement and just has a really good voice and kind of adds a lot to the excitement of the game. But kind of be remiss if we didn't mention the local crew, John Ahlers and Brian Hayward. I think are do a phenomenal job, and great guys too. So I always appreciated them as a player, the way they kind of did things, explained the game. Johnny was always did a great job with the play-by-play, and then the way Brian Hayward kind of breaks things down, always kind of like with a great kind of educational sense of like kind of explaining the nuances of the game, and tends to steer more positive, which I think as a player, I always kind of appreciate that, and not something like, yeah, I'm not gonna say a name, but the idiot who used to do our games up in San Jose, a guy was just like throw guys under the bus like left and right, like just I don't know, he just self-serving to the max, like just wanted to try and like I really never really understood that, to be honest, about the need to throw guys under the bus and just bash guys and then be their best friend the next day on the team play. It was just, I don't know. Wasn't a big fan of that, so I always appreciate the guys who can make things interesting without kind of throwing other guys to the wolves and going all living in negative town all the time.
Yeah, that's understandable. I agree with Ahlers and Hayward. I met John for the first time at the rookie class or the rookie tournament. And he I mean, I just introduced myself and he could not have been nicer. A real good guy, and I like kind of his little sayings that he has, like takes the mail and serves up a pizza and what does he say? Brushes it off or dusts it off. I like his little sayings he's got. He sneaks them in there pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple of class acts and great guys for sure. But so who would your three?
So yeah, I've got obviously in the kind of the vein you had of Bob Cole, I had wow, I cannot believe I'm having this brain fart right. Doc Emrick, that's the worst brain fart maybe I've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just like you, he's been the big games that I've listened to and in the Stanley Cup playoff games in the United States, and he has such a great cadence, such a great, obviously everyone knows his kind of wealth of verbs and everything, and he just, I mean, he his to me, his voice is big hockey as well. I love his back in the 1996 World Cup of Hockey. I think I was only in third grade, but I just remember him screaming, "Amonte breaks the tie." I was like, had a little kid boner on that one.
Yeah.
And also when he misses sometimes when he hits somebody hits the post or misses the net and he just goes, "Miss the net with the shot." He sounds like he's gonna have a brain aneurysm. But he's great. I love Rick Jeanneret too. He's got so many good highlights and so many good. I love the la 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 Fontaine.
Oh, yes.
He's great. Where then going to where when the I think they forced game seven against New Jersey, and he said, "We're going to where Jimmy Hoffa's buried." Like, that was a good one. He's got that kind of pizzazz that I like in play-by-play guys. And then the last one is definitely a legend as well, and I wish he'd get back to doing hockey more, is Gary Thorne. He had, I mean, obviously has the legendary call with Paul Kariya off the floor on the board. He was
Yes.
he's great, and it pains me to hear him have to call such a boring sport as baseball. And I played baseball up until through a few couple years of college, so I feel like I'm allowed to disparage a little bit, but he's so much better suited as a hockey play-by-play guy.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I guess honorable mention for me would be the current Las Vegas Golden Knights TV play-by-play guy, Dave Gosher. He used to do the radio for the Bruins, and one of my fonder memories is hearing him call their 2011 Stanley Cup championship on the radio, the Get the Duck Boats Ready call. So he's also got a fond place there. But yeah, I think that'll do it. Anything else you want to add?
What about, I know he's a kind of, love him or hate him kind of guy, but Jack Edwards.
I mean, there's a place for what he does. Like he's obviously, a favorite of the local Bruins fans, but he's worn out his welcome with me. I used to love him when I was younger and gung ho about the Bruins, but now that I like the art of play by play as much as I like to hear the guys do it. And I think the ones who can, and obviously he works for Nesson, so he's got to be a little bit. I mean, they encourage, I'm sure more than many other networks, encourage the homerism. So. It's not like he's committing a crime, but it's kind of worn out its welcome for me. I like the neutral guys. I mean, that are not so, I guess, blind to what's going on the other side of on the other bench.
That's fair. That's fair.
All right, so I think that'll do it for episode 11. We will see you next week, and we're working on some more content, some more interviews for you guys. And on top of that, you can also, like I said at the top of the show, find us on all your favorite podcast directories: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Luminary, and TuneIn, at Believe.com and at Believe Podcasts on your social accounts. You can find me at Deli Tweets on Twitter and Kent at Husk Verna. That's HUSK_VERNA on Instagram. Feel free, if you want, to ask us any questions or give us any sort of requests that you want for the show, things you want to hear us talk about, because we'd love to have your feedback. Anything else? Anything else you want to add?
That's it. No, well said. Well done.
Cool. Have a good night, and we'll see you next week.